This meeting is now being recorded.
Gotcha.
So we're it actually turned out that it was pretty close to what we did with XSLT, but the difference was that it was aware of repeating elements, even though there was only one of them in the instance document. So
right.
It always put
right.
them in an array. Yep.
Michael, let me stop there for a second because I just hit the recording button. So I wanted to make sure folks know this was the Jason call for July 31st at 1 p.m. We have Michael Morris, Susan McCracken, Mei Hung, Sam Allen, Michael Sessa, James Whetstone. And you were talking about Moxie, right?
Yes, Sam was.
Yeah.
I just talked about that, doing the translation, being the tool. There are other modules, right, that read the annotation or the objects, and do they turn out different JSON output?
Are we talking about the JAXB annotations, Sam?
Yeah, the JAXB. You said that the way it worked was that Moxie read that it knows the class structure and it can read the annotations and then produce a JSON output.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Sam kind of went over this already.
Right.
The general way it works is, you know, there's this thing called XJC in Java, and it reads the XML schemas, and then it creates these objects that are annotated with JAXB annotations. And then Moxie knows how to read those JAXB annotations, and with a little bit of configuration, can handle stuff like namespaces and attribute symbols and things like that you can configure in Moxie. And then the nice thing about Moxie that isn't available in like something like Jackson, at least based on my findings, is that you can still validate the JSON against the schemas, which is pretty cool. Did that answer your question, or it's probably more long-winded than you needed?
Yeah, and my point, I think you're bringing up the point, and this is what I wanted to discuss today, is that this is not necessarily an out-of-the-box solution, right? We still have to make some decisions about what, even if we went this route, what the output would be, because you can configure it, right, to...
Yeah, that's right. You do need to agree on... And this isn't, I might be missing something, but at the very minimum, you need to agree on the attribute symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as namespaces go, just the basic PESC namespace name, we could use the one that's already in the XML schema. So, for example, mm-hmm. like... In the college transcript, I think it's just COLTRN or something like that. But basically, just each side needs to agree on the namespace mapping, and that should do the trick. And if there's namespaces that are only interpreted by the sender and the receiver, so for example, with eTranscript California, there is a namespace for that. But if a school receives the transcript and doesn't have that namespace information, they can ignore it. But if they do want it, then if they do want that information and they want to validate it, then they need to basically beforehand communicate with who's ever sending the file and understand that what the namespace is going to be called, and then write the configuration to support it.
So since most of our elements are not qualified because, in fact, I don't think we have any top-level elements in XML. There's a couple in core, I think, but not very many. So none of our elements are qualified with a prefix, even in the XML documents, right, except for the top level.
Right. It's the same with JSON.
We don't have to worry about the lower level namespaces, but if we ever did have top level elements, those would be qualified and they'd get translated into namespaces.
I think it'd probably be a good idea to have a top level namespace in the JSON for college transcript or any other thing that's passed, just to make it so that, you know, in the future it's future proof, so, you know, different namespaces underneath that can be applied. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I would advocate you know, at least specifying the top level namespace.
And that will be different for different. Obviously, we have and for all of our schemas, we have a top level schema that, in its most, well, we have some that do have several types defined, but most of our schema, I think all the transcript one, right, only have a top level.
Yeah.
A top level element,
you're right.
And perhaps one type that defines that element, or a type that's referenced in academic record, or usually
that's
academic
right.
record in the case of the transcripts. So you just, yeah, we could use the same prefix from those. And are you, now does this also provide the namespace URL itself, or URN?
You mean in Moxie?
In JSON? I mean, when you guys produce...
There's no place in the JSON that actually indicates the actual URL for the namespace. It's in the mapping, so it's in the code. So in Moxie, you basically map a word like C-O-L-T-R-N for college transcript to this special URL for it, and it never gets into the document. The URL never gets into the document, but it's mapped in the configuration.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess what I'm trying to get at here, and just open it up for discussion, is, I mean, how, if we took this approach, how would this work? I mean, I'm trying to think, and I think when, Sam, when you were talking about it too, I think that you were looking at different languages besides Java implementation, right? So that,
well,
you'd have a different,
yeah, my experience is with Java, but I would assume, you know, XML has been around for a while, that most languages would have a mechanism for dealing with XML and XSV same way Java does. Conceptually, going from an XSV to a domain object, then once you have the domain object, you can go to different marshalling languages, JSON, XML. Conceptually, like, that's the approach. What specific tools you use in different languages to do that, I'm not, I couldn't tell you the exact tools to use, but I'm fairly confident that they exist. And we did a quick Google search for PHP and for C#, and we found hits on that. But I haven't, like, actually developed in those languages and produced it, so I couldn't demonstrate it for you guys.
Would we expect as a requirement that the different languages would produce the same JSON?
I don't think so. I mean, JSON is a language. There's multiple ways to represent the same thing.
Right.
I would say as long as the you know, domain object, when it's populated, when you you know, unmarshal from the marshalling language to your domain object, as long as that object is valid and has all the information in it, I think it'd be okay to have it represented in different ways.
So what you would, in terms of the use case, you'd say, okay, if you have, and here's where if you have a PHP implementation, let's say, would you expect your partner to use PHP? because otherwise that may come across as invalid if it's even represented a different way.
I mean, it shouldn't. As long as it's valid JSON and the data is represented in a way that, you know, it's valid JSON, and when it's read from that JSON into the domain object, it ends up being, you know, the same piece of information in the same spot. It doesn't matter that PHP generated the JSON versus Java. So, for instance, let's say you use a different representation for an attribute. The end result is a class variable. As long as that class variable gets populated, even though it may be represented in two different ways in JSON, I mean, I don't think that matters. That's just my two cents, so I don't know what you guys think. Or
yeah, would it validate? I mean, I'm not, yeah, that's where I'm getting, you're right, if you validated the object, so that's the idea, is validated against the object that was created by the schema, then it should map. You talked last time about, what was that, the JAXP context in terms of a validation, right?
Yeah, I talked about it. I mean, what Sam is saying, I agree with. I think the JSON might be different, and you can, different languages could take different JSON and marshal it correctly. But I don't know. It seems like it might be error prone. It seems like it might be better to really just come up with a very specific format, naming convention for everything. I don't know about that. It feels like we should come up with one standard and have everybody file standard and have everybody use it. But Devin, I mean, if we move forward with, you know, sort of what Sam's describing, I mean, Devin, we'll need a test with different, somebody's going to need to test with different packages and sort of, at least validate that in general, there's no problem.
It all works, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as far as you were, the validation in terms of Moxie, is done with what's called a JAXP context. Yeah. Where you give it, you know, the XML schemas, and that context is able to generate other language specific objects to do things like validation and marshaling and things like that based on the schemas. And I'm with Sam. I don't know what the other languages, like C Sharp. I did a quick Google of C Sharp, and there seems to be the equivalent tools to do what we do in Java, but I've never used them. I don't know how good or how bad they are, or if they would be adequate for doing what we need.
Yeah, so we need to do some research on that to see how
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah, it's just, and I may be wrong on this, but I'm more comfortable with having a standard mapping between XML and JSON, but I understand, but that defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do here. We're saying, let's not worry about that. Let's not worry about creating that standard. Let's say for this language, this is how it'll work, and this is the tools you should use to produce what we produce, and leave it at that. So anybody else want to chime in on this? I don't have any strong feelings yet on this thing, but anybody else want to chime in? Anybody want to ask some questions? Okay, so what would be, let's talk about how we might roll this out. So we say, okay, use Jax, if you're using Java, use JAXP, use Moxie, And we can say use or don't use the at sign for attributes. And then how would we certify?
One way I was just going to say, I think, I mean, I'm with you on, I would rather see, the file format, standardized, so that the tools and the languages are sort of, secondary. I mean, you know, the JAXB stuff really generates, and the Moxie stuff, it generates really clean JSON, and from what I've been reading on the internet, it's really Moxie's sort of becoming the go-to library in Java to do this kind of thing. I'd like to see it sort of standardized on the output of Moxie. I mean, and I'm kind of selfish in that matter, right? Because I've already used Moxie and I think it's good. I think the output looks good. But I do think that it should be standardized, separate from the programming language.
Well, let me give Sam a chance to chime in on the issue of, you know, what he was thinking when he originally presented this. What were you thinking, Sam, how this would work in as a standard?
Yeah, so the idea basically was to make it a little more marshalling language independent. And so conceptually, kind of the idea I was pitching was having domain objects and domain validators. And we haven't really figured out the domain validator part yet. And then using tools to marshal. So the tools can marshal to XML, the tools can marshal to JSON, the tools can marshal to some other marshalling language layer, Thrift or something else. But the validation and the objects that represent the data are in the domain objects. That's kind of what I was thinking, but you know, it's just an idea.
I like that idea. I really do, and I didn't mean to say anything other than that. I think we should investigate that for sure. I really like that idea. I'm just worried. It worries me that the different tools and different languages may not be easy for people to use. But I think we should investigate that. I think it would make the whole thing more flexible for sure. And maybe in the long run easier, right? People can just use their tools, whatever tools that they prefer and languages, and they're good.
Well, if you define the Moxie output as a standard, and that's becoming the standard, wouldn't that translate to other languages too? Wouldn't they start?
I think it should.
Yeah.
It definitely should. If the other languages and tools are good, I mean, it should. I think, Sam, you agree with that, right? I mean, most of the tools out there should take that JSON and marshal it to whatever domain objects they use, just like Sam is saying. Yeah.
Joining the meeting.
Michael again.
And would the XML end up, I mean, once you go from, you receive a message in JSON and you want to get it out as XML, is there anything that could happen there that mistranslation or in another language? It depends on the quality of tools. We'd have to just run a trial set through and say, does this work, right?
Yeah, I mean, in that case, you'd go from JSON to domain object, like a Java
right.
object, and then out to XML.
Yeah.
And that
or,
is kind of the power of the domain object method is you can go to multiple marshing layers easy instead of having kind of, if your specification is really specific to the marshaling language, then you're kind of stuck in that marshaling language. Like, that's where all the rules are.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think through this. Let me ask the question again. How do we standardize this? We just say, we define the libraries, the tools, the classes that would be used. Is Moxie a package, or what is it?
That's a good question. I mean, you have lots of options. As far as, being a utility for people to use, you don't want to add too many dependencies. The more dependencies you add, the more harder it will be for people to use your stuff, because everyone has their own stack, and if you have a competing dependency that causes issues, and that becomes kind of a pain in the butt. So,
I mean, one thing you could do.
Go ahead, James.
I was just going to say, I mean, one thing you could do is we could come up with a reference set of tools for several languages, Java, C Sharp, C or C++, native code, or PHP, and do some reference implementations with those tools, and basically provide that. So it's kind of instead of defining the actual file format and so forth, just stick with using the XML schemas and then coming up with reference solutions for all the major languages. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Yeah, well, it fits with what Sam's thinking too, so I mean, they all fit together, so yeah.
Right.
The other thing, I mean, this is kind of another step. if we want to get away from XSD, and this would be more work, but having the rules actually in the domain objects. So what PES could provide in this example would be domain objects and the validators in that domain language, and examples of how to output to different marshaling languages, XML or JSON, but not having the rules mean XSD, but actually in the domain. Now, granted, it's going to be more work because we have XSDs today, and it's a very feature-rich language. You can do that that type of rule language in the various languages. It's just a little bit different, so you'd have to kind of rewrite it. Granted, that's more work, but at the end, when you're done in that scenario, you don't have any dependencies on the marshaling language. You can go to whatever you want. You can go to JSON, you can go to XML, and the validation rules are in your kind of in with your domain objects.
Now, could we get away with just having, I mean, there's just too many people using different languages, right? That's why you have to do this for multiple languages.
Yeah, and the thing about languages is, there might be something new or new set of tools that are unsupported down the road, or that they're new, and then, really, with this way of doing things, you kind of be on the hook to basically come up with a reference implementation of whatever new tool set is being used. Or the tool
set
of
choice. Well, I definitely separate it into multiple pieces. So when you think of like MVC, Model View Controller, part one should be the model, and that should just be the domain objects and the data, and that's just purely whatever the domain language, so Java. There's no external library dependency at all. And then number two would be the validators. Now you can write them using a framework to make your life easier, but you could write that purely in the domain language also. And then phase three is the marshalling and unmarshalling. And that you'll definitely be kind of tied to frameworks and library. I don't want to write my own. I doubt anyone here does. But those should be three separate things. And the marshalling, unmarshalling, if we tie those all together into one package, yeah, it's going to be probably not going to work out too well. But if we have two or three separate things where it's like, okay, you can download just the domain objects, and then you can also download just the validators, and then you can use our recommended marshalling and unmarshalling, or you can use your own. Now, obviously, for it to be compatible, it's going to need to marshal and unmarshal into the correct data, and we can do that with like unit tests and a testing suite type thing. So somebody, if they want to write their own marshalling, as long as it passes the unit tests on the unmarshalling and our validation rules, then you get the green light, you're good to go.
So that's, yeah, the domain objects. And when you say domain objects, you mean in addition to, I mean, you have the data structure, obviously, of the class and the all of the properties and things like that. But you also have the annotations. How do other languages have annotate? How do they handle the metadata?
So I would, in the situation I just described, you wouldn't be using annotations.
Okay.
So the annotations are tying you to a framework. The annotations are used by something. So
right,
in the JaxB
yeah.
example, JaxB, the JaxB annotations. So now you're tied to the JaxB library, which is a great solution for what we have today because it's less work. You have XSDs, you want to generate your Java objects, and everything just works.
Right.
But if you want to, this is a bigger project, but if you wanted to make it completely the domain language, the domain objects, you wouldn't have those annotations. And then you would have your rules in the domain object, the domain language, and then your marshalling would be a separate mechanism. And the marshalling reference implementation on that one, yeah, absolutely can have the annotations because now it makes sense that your annotations are using the marshalling framework that you're tied to at that point.
So you'd add those to the domain objects then, or how would that, where would they come
yeah,
from?
Yeah, you could do that, or it could be, Java has multiple ways of doing things. You can do aspect-oriented programming. You can do some sort of processor, some Maven trick. You could, have a JaxB version of the model objects. You'd have multiple choices.
So the domain objects just be a basic class with a bunch of properties.
Right.
And the data types of those properties.
Right.
Okay, then, yeah, that's where I get confused. Yeah, I'm beginning to understand.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about data structures. I think from your perspective, yeah, the domain object is just a data structure. And then, there's going to be some whatever tools that people use to marshal and unmarshal just have to be able to marshal into those data structures.
Yeah, and then that's a and then the validator. So the you're saying the validators would only need the domain objects; they wouldn't need the.
Right.
But you'd have to unmarshal it to get there, right? So that requires the annotation.
Yeah. So you need to unmarshal from JSON or XML into your domain objects, and then validate those domain objects.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the way Moxie does it.
Yeah.
Moxie uses the JAXB annotations. But like Sam was saying earlier, which is it's great, yeah, keep those things separate, you know, to make the whole thing a little bit more flexible.
So then do that for each, then we have to do that for each language.
Right.
Okay. And has the advantages for the programmer, it provides them with a really easy framework to do all their work. And they don't
Hopefully, yes, that's the idea.
Yeah, and I think what it buys us, what it buys programmers and implementation is that instead of having, you know, a standardized file format that you have to sometimes struggle to adhere to figure out. Maybe you don't even have the tools to support that file format. I mean, maybe, you know, there's just something that's in the way of doing it that way. It kind of makes it might easier, at least for the programmer, to get it implemented because it's a little bit more flexible. Is that kind of what you were thinking, Sam, when you were coming up with that idea?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's cool.
Give an opportunity for anybody else to chime in or ask questions. Everybody's on mute.
This is amazing.
We're learning and absorbing.
Okay. Well, eventually I'll run out of questions.
Just at a high level, I mean, this is so PESC has traditionally produced you know, XSD rules and
right.
XML instant document examples. I mean, how does the rest of the PESC community feel conceptually about using, instead of defining the rules and examples in a marshalling language, providing, you know, this additional thing, which would be the tools for the programmer to use? It would be a little bit different from what PESC has done traditionally. Are there any concerns at a conceptual level about that?
Well, we should ask the non-programmers. May, did you have a comment?
I am a programmer. Actually, I tried using JSP. I haven't started looking into Moxie yet. So, which means I hit the namespace problem, but I should look into the Moxie to see how the domain object generated. I'll try.
Good. Yeah, so it, the more people that have experience with this, the better, that's for sure. So, there's something elegant about this. And
Sam, was your question answered, or do you want to restate it?
Well, I just want to make sure that, I don't know, those maybe not with a programming background aren't feeling like, I don't know what, it would be different producing, you know, XML examples and XSD versus providing domain objects. From a programmer's perspective, it's way better. Adoption would be easier. There'd be less ambiguity. But from the PESC organization standpoint, it would be a little bit different. So I'm not super familiar with those stakeholders, you know, if that would be something outside of their comfort zone, or if that's good. That was kind of the point of my question.
Yeah, well, I mean, thought Michael, that's something that could be either in the parking lot or could be, you know, I think at the end of this process, whenever we are done and we say, oh, look what we produced, how nice, it would then, I think, Michael would follow what we've done in the past, is put it out for public comment and then vote on it. Right?
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think it's an important point, Sam, and I think we have the opportunity along the process, you know, just like we did with the XML technical spec. We put it out for public comment, and then we voted on it. So, you know, the big deliverables out of the tab we vote on through the normal process. So, and that's something we could make people aware of during the public comment period.
Exactly. I think historically the only question that might come up is who maintains it and where that responsibility lies. But if you're being given the tool, I wouldn't turn it down.
And, I mean, the other thing would be, you know, questions about would this be an open source project that you would allow contributions from outside of PESC? Obviously, it would be through a review process.
Leaving the meeting.
Let's say a new language comes out and somebody wants to write their own object, domain objects and validators and stuff in that language, and then provide that to the community if that's something you guys if you'd want to structure the project that way, or if it would be kind of a closed, PESC produces it, submit your request for new languages or something type deal.
Well, this is an excellent point, and actually we've been having an sort of an ongoing discussion about this, Sam, is, you know, is PESC open source? And I've been doing research, you know, about the difference, you know, the technical difference. When, you know, when people in open source, you know, there's a technical definition to open source and there's a technical definition to open standards. And I think folks use them, some folks use them interchangeably. Some folks use them sort of colloquially, when they mean, oh, it's open source, but it's not really open source. You know, it doesn't meet the definition. PESC follows an open source process. It's just we have a controlled open source process. So the community can give back anything, you know, during either public comment or during any part of the process. And if it's good, then we incorporate it into the standard. One of the things that concerned me about open source was sort of not that it's a free-for-all, because you still have to go through an open source process, just like you would have to go through the PESC process, is you know, making the analogy, you know, PESC has 7 versions of the transcript out there. Do we want 7 versions of, you know, a JSON spec out there? Or, you know, do we control that process? And we have version 1, version 2, version 3, version 4, PESC approved, versus, you know, I'm not sure what the open source process is. I believe you still have to submit your derivative work through the process. But I'm just trying to figure out how that all works. And, you know, do we need to engage the open source community versus if PESC is open source, then our process is open source. We just don't follow the open source process. PESC has an open source process that's a little bit more controlled and disciplined. So let me just stop there because I'm not sure exactly yet where this research is going to end up.
So that actually brings up an interesting point. It might be a little bit of a tangent, but with the PESC standards, we have different versions of these XML, XSD. If we structured this as domain objects, using like Maven or equivalent in other languages to source control it, as long as you maintain backwards compatibility, somebody implementing and using this library wouldn't need to support, you know, 6 different versions of the high school transcript. They could just use the latest, and it would, as long as backwards compatibility is maintained, would be able to consume any 1.6 transcript or older. And in that way, you'd only be, if PEFs chose to, they could say, okay, we're only openly supporting, you know, 3 versions, 4 versions. If you're on something older, you need to upgrade to the newer version of it.
How I would love to do that. I mean, there are folks still implementing EDI, and I don't. That's part of the problem. Is, you know, do we adopt sort of that methodology? You know, I think there has to be some level of progression within PESC. Or does our portfolio, you know, is our portfolio on the floor and it goes to the ceiling and we just keep pushing the ceiling up? And if you want to stay on the floor level, you can stay on the floor level. You know, that's a larger discussion that I'm not prepared to have here, but it does raise a good point.
Right.
You know, for instance, we carry EDI. We talk about EDI all the time. I don't promote EDI.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's just, I guess, food for thought. I'm not proposing any sort of change here.
No, I think it's an excellent point. And Michael, I'm not sure where this falls into our sort of pest, you know, the tab discussion, but you know, these are, you know, the exact, you know, kinds of issues I think we should be talking about. Now, whether they fall under JSON, you know, or, you know, need to follow a parallel discussion track because it's not directly related to JSON versus tangentially. So
yeah,
I know we talked a lot of them. Go ahead, Michael.
I was just saying, you know, as a, to, and I think this is where this is headed, is that the point is for people to adopt these standards, right now they have to write a whole bunch of code. Now they're using some tools like JAXP and things like that to help them to do that. But it's pretty daunting task in a lot of cases. And so I think, you know, providing a structure for people to actually get the endpoints created on these things would be really powerful. So,
yeah, I don't like that word daunting.
You know, one other thing we could do is we could create JSON schema out of. I demonstrated last week how to generate JSON schema out of Java, and so what I did was XSD to JAXP annotated objects, and from that I could generate JSON schema. So we could publish a JSON schema for those languages that aren't supported yet. So we produce domain objects and validators for the languages that the popular languages are, and then the fallback is a JSON schema that we're able to generate, and then the fallback, you know, if somebody wants to rely 100% on XSD, then those already exist. That would be another option.
Yeah, that's one of the things we tried, was actually doing a direct translation from XML schema to JSON schema. And was able to hit, that was, we almost got that finished. Not quite. So a few more issues with things like choice in XML that cause some problems, but yeah, that's always the other option, and that, you know, we can go down that path, and that was the other thing we were thinking about, is do we have JSON schemas and XML schemas that are parallel with each other, and this way you would generate them automatically, right, instead of going through and instead of rewriting all of our standards. And I don't think anybody wants to do that. Does anybody think it'd be worthwhile to, well, that's not a fair question the way I phrased it, but I mean, the point is, disagree with me and I'll hate you. Yeah, no, Jason, you know, I don't think as much effort as we have put into creating our standards, I mean, to do that same thing again from scratch with JSON just doesn't seem to make sense. On the other hand, that JSON would be more JSON-like. It would be what people are used to and how it's usually structured rather than some mechanism that we're using to translate from XML to JSON. So, I'm trying to think of the amount of work that's involved here, you know, what would be involved in doing some of these things, and I think it's that's going to be one of the ways of determining whether or not this is going to work or not. But I think it's really interesting. We got 5 minutes left. I'd like to. There are some other ways that we can, you know, we're saying one way to do it is create these domain objects. There's other specifications that are ways of representing these objects, and CAM is one of them. We've talked about that. Now that's an XML dialect, right? I mean, it's a set of XML rules. So it's really still XML. It's a different kind of schema, but there's already translations between CAM and JSON and CAM and XML. So that's one approach. And the other one is, you know, there's a lot of tools for converting between UML and XML. And I haven't done enough research to know if something similar for UML class diagrams, and which is really just another way of representing an object, right? But it's more universal than a particular language implementation. So I'd like to pursue those as well and take a look at those and argue why they may not make sense as opposed to this approach. So it's always good to consider other things to say, yeah, here's the disadvantage of this or the advantage of this. The other thing I noticed here is I think it was James said that the Jackson implementation is that mainly to go between to Marshall and unmarshall JSON? Is that the primary use of Jackson?
Well, it'll convert a domain object to JSON.
Right.
From a domain object to JSON and back. Yeah, that's right.
It's got its own annotation for JSON, but does it work with XML too, or?
I don't even think so. It has some flexibility. It doesn't necessarily even need any annotations. It has some rules for taking, you know, a Java a domain object and converting it to JSON.
Okay.
There's an add-on that understands JaxD, so you can take your JSON, your Jackson library in Java, and then just import this new add-on that understands JaxB, and it will take the JaxB stuff and convert it to JSON based on the JaxB.
Oh, okay.
When I was using it, there were some limitations to it that I couldn't live with that I needed, like validation, and so that's why I looked for a different library.
So it wouldn't give it, you couldn't validate the, or you couldn't.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Not in the way I needed with the schemas, and also as I missed it, there was no support for namespaces, and for example, when I used Jackson to marshal a college transcript that had the eTranscript California UDE, the user defined extension, it didn't know how to convert the user-defined extension. And so as a result, I'd have a bunch of JSON and then this XML blob in the middle of it. It could be that I missed some trick or configuration to handle that, but I just don't think it's in there, at least not today.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, So that's another intermediate. I mean, I guess they've added annotations now for JSON for Jackson to do more stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, there's, like I said, there's an add-on for the JAXB, but yeah, Jackson's pretty good at just converting a domain object, a data structure to JSON, and back.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you, everybody. That's a wide-ranging discussion, lots to think about. I've got, my brain hurts after this meeting. This is really heavy stuff, and to think about this is, it may be good if we get some examples again. And I think, you know, we should probably look at our objects again, look at the annotations, and maybe spend a little more time on that to understand how that works. And but it certainly makes sense that, I mean, it's really, and you're talking about objects that are really, there's no methods, they're just basically a set of properties that some are very complex. It's just a large data structure, right? With one object using another to define its properties, and you get the whole train, that the whole hierarchy that way. So the class structure. So it's, it's an interesting way. And all language, most object-oriented languages are pretty much the same. I think that was Sam's point, is that they shouldn't differ too much, right, in terms of how they structure things. They're, none of them are as complicated as XML.
Michael, just a quick note, because we have James and Sam on, so we're doing a demo on Thursday during the EdExchange call.
Oh, good.
And, on the global meet, there was a WebEx button. I think they're affiliated somehow. So I sent out a WebEx for the call on Thursday. And Sam and James, if you want to connect 15, 20 minutes before, I can share the screen. I think WebEx is much better than global meet. But
Is there a reason why you don't use Zoom? I'm just curious.
Well, Zoom is California.
We never set
up a Zoom account. We've been using Zoom for, because it was actually Mark Cohen's personal account. So we needed to get off it. And we've had web conferencing, but it hasn't been that good. I just never launched it. So this is automatically included with our phone line. So the phone line had the functionality there, but it stumped. They just did an upgrade, so that's why I launched it. So we're not paying extra.
I have to drop off because I have a Skype meeting.
Sure. Yep. We'll talk next week.
Bye.
And, but I think Global Meet was related to WebEx. So again, we're not paying. If it stinks, then I'll go to something else. I was just looking at GoToMeeting. It's only $30 a month.
I think Zoom is less for what it's worth. Just to throw it out there. I think Zoom is less than $30 a month. Yeah.
Well, when you get down below 30,
Hi, Brett.
It's pretty cheap, so. But we'll try that on Thursday, and then we gotta get this right. Okay, everybody.
Okay, great. I appreciate you spending the time. And
bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Did you get
Leaving
a chance to take a look at the diagram I sent?
Alan.
Leaving the meeting.
Hi.
What's done?
Leaving the meeting.
Why not?
McCracken. Leaving the meeting.
Go down further.
Okay. Steve Morgan.